You're listening to Life Gone Wrong, a Spotify original with Sandeep Rao. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Life Gone Wrong. I'm Sandeep Rao, and on today's episode, I'm joined by former MD, Senior Vice President at SAP Labs, author and founder of the India Inclusion Summit, Firoz Biyar. Thanks for joining me. Hi, Firoz, and welcome to Life Gone Wrong. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode.
Thank you so much, Sandeep, for inviting me.
Lovely to have you here, and it's very interesting to have you on this particular series because Life Gone Wrong, the conversations I have on this podcast are about things that you can prepare for but not eventually be ready for. Mm-hmm. So you, in many ways, when someone looks at your bio, your resume, looks at your success story, are pretty much an Indian parent's wet dream. You've done everything right. As I mentioned earlier, you're a senior vice president at SAP Labs. You were the MD, the managing director at SAP Labs. Yeah. You're an author. You're a sports enthusiast. You're the founder of the India Inclusion Summit. And you do various other things. You're a father. You're a husband. You're a good friend. Like, why? Why would people like you do this? Like, you put us to shame. But at the same time, you told me something when we spoke on the phone.
Yeah.
Is that, yes, success by the typical standards, you have academic success, you have professional success. But you told me something which was very significant, is that your life actually started meaning something for you as early as 10 years back.
Yeah.
Can you tell my listeners about that?
Firstly, like you said, I mean, when I became the managing director of SAP Labs, this was in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the youngest heads of a global multinational in India.
Right.
And, you know, from the outside, it looked like the perfect life. I was also incredibly fortunate to marry my college sweetheart, which was, again, I think, a bigger achievement than my career successes.
For her or for you?
At least for me, for sure.
You, yeah. We don't have her on this episode, but we'll get that counterpoint later.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and then my son was born, Vivan, in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And life looked like, you know, the perfect, well-scripted story.
You know,
marrying your college sweetheart, heading a global multinational. I was on the newspapers, you know, every week. Mm-hmm. And it looked like the perfect script, right?
Yeah.
And then in 2010, something happened which really changed my life forever.
Mm-hmm.
I was meeting a friend for a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And Vivan at that time was, I think, 15 months old.
Right.
And he looked at Vivan and said, Firoz, you know, there is something odd about him. And I was a little taken aback and, you know, you don't
Expect something like that for your 15-month-old kid. Yeah.
And I said, what do you mean? He said, Firoz, I noticed two things. One is he's not making eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
Second is he's seeing the same videos. He had an iPad and he was watching the same videos over and over again. So it seemed like a repeated behavior, right? And he said, Firoz, I think you should go and check him out if everything is okay. And he mentioned a word called autism. Check him if he's autistic.
Mm-hmm.
When my wife heard it, she was even more, you know, she was a little angry. How can they talk about
my son? You don't hear that about your child, right?
Yeah. And at that point, my son was, you know, perfect in terms of his development growth.
Yeah.
The doctors were all pretty, you know, giving him a clean shit about his
physical health
and so on. So anyway, I went back home and first thing I did was ask Dr. Google, you know, doctor is Google, of course.
Yeah.
And I typed the word, what is autism?
Mm-hmm.
And then I read about it and I looked at what are the characteristics of autism, right? And you wouldn't believe this, Sandeep. I went through it, the top 10 characteristics, I could literally check box in whatever I saw in Vivan. On the spectrum, right? As I said, repeated behavior.
Right.
He was walking on his toes sometimes. He was not making eye contact. He was not responding to his name. Very small things which you notice, but you never connected the dots.
Right.
And from then on, the next 3 months was just going from one doctor to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this final meeting that happened. The first thing we did was we said maybe he has a hearing problem because he was not responding to his name. So we went to a hearing doctor and they said, no, everything is okay.
Yeah.
The final meeting with the doctor, me and my wife were there. And he said something like, okay, your son is on the autism spectrum. Yeah. Start him on a therapy. At that moment, it really, you know, I remember the drive back from the doctor to the home.
Mm-hmm.
we didn't speak to each other.
Yeah.
Complete silence. My son was sitting in behind, and you know, we didn't speak anything. I went back home, locked myself into the bathroom, and cried straight for half an hour.
Right.
At that moment, I realized my life is going to change.
Yeah.
And it was downhill after that. The first few months, it was very hard to accept it. You know, you go through the phases of denial, right? Why would it happen to me?
Self-pity.
I haven't done this, anything wrong. Why would this happen to me? And the first thing that you do as a parent is search for a cure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe, you know, the best doctors can cure him.
Yeah.
And very soon I realized this is a condition for life.
It's not curable.
There is nothing called an anti-autism medicine.
You can only cope with it.
Or
prepare
it.
him for the world outside.
So that was a very difficult phase of my life, right? So here I was on one side, you know, being the head of a huge multinational with 5,000 engineers. And on the other side, I was struggling to deal with the fact that my only son has now got a condition for life.
Right.
But there was one moment when I look back, and I call this my defining moment in life, which really was like a switch from seeing the world one way to seeing the world a completely different way. This was a phone call from my mentor, Dr. Kiran Bedi, who is now the governor of Pondicherry. I'd been in regular touch with her. She's been like a family to me. But I hadn't spoken to her for a very long time, especially after Vivan's condition for almost 3 months. She called me and said, "Firoz, what happened, beta? Why this radio silence from your side? Is everything okay?" She was just checking on me.
Yeah.
And I literally broke down and told about, you know, this is what has happened. Vivan is diagnosed with autism. I don't know what to do. I'm heartbroken, blah, blah, blah. And then she said something which, as I said, was a defining moment. She said, "Firoz, people spend their entire lifetime not knowing what their purpose is.
Yeah.
You are incredibly fortunate that the purpose found you."
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, I didn't understand what she meant.
Mm-hmm.
But what she was trying to tell is, Firoz, you have the means to take care of your son, right? You have the financial means, you have the network, you have the intellect.
Yeah.
Don't just spend the rest of your life trying to do something for only Vivan, which you, any parent, and you would do as well, and that should be your top priority.
Yeah.
But do something for people who are not as fortunate as you are. And that moment onwards, I think my life changed.
Do something right with the wrong that's been dealt you.
Yes. Again, I don't know whether to call it wrong, right? In retrospect.
But in societal norms, it is wrong.
Yes.
In you had the prescription for everything going right.
Yes.
And you didn't prepare for this.
Yes.
But for lack of a better word.
Yes.
Things did go.
Yes.
Unexpectedly.
Completely different. I mean, this was not what I had planned for.
Exactly.
Right?
No one does.
No one can
and no one wants it. But at the end of the day, when you got dealt that card, you took it upon yourself to feel the way humans do feel about life when things go wrong.
Yes.
But this conversation with Kiran Bedi was
a defining moment.
A moment in your life when the purpose found you.
Yes.
And not just for your family, but for the world out.
Yeah,
world
I think
at large.
The way it works is, you know, now when I look back at the inclusion movement, it's been almost, you know, it's as old as Vivan himself, right?
Right.
He was diagnosed when he was 15, 18 months. He's now close to 10 years.
Wow.
That started the journey. But the funny thing is, finding the purpose by itself means nothing, right? What do you do about it?
Yeah.
I had no clue what to do with it, right? I didn't know what autism was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what the situation was.
Yeah.
But it forced me to act.
Yeah.
I think that was the key moment, that what can you do with the things that you have access to? So obviously, I spent a lot of time trying to speak to a lot of people. First, as a parent, for my own son, what can I do?
Yeah.
But I think one thing led to the other. And I think there were two big things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
One was, of course, meeting my other mentor, which is Dr. Arun Shauri, who, as you know, was a cabinet minister.
Yes.
He had a son with a profound disability, cerebral palsy. And I had invited him for a talk at SAP.
Right.
And I, during a conversation, I said, "Sir, what do you think we should do?" And he said something which is very simple. He said, "Firoz, you know what? We have to change the narrative about disability in this country."
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Today, people see disability as a negative, as a problem. We should celebrate people's different abilities. How do you switch that narrative from being very negative to something more positive? And he said, "Firoz, create a platform. Create a platform where we celebrate people's differences." That was the starting of the India Inclusion Summit.
That's where the summit was
born. Started in 2012. It's funny, Sandeep, there was not a single event focusing on people with disabilities. Not a single event. If you look everywhere around the world, disability is a small sector section in a big event. If you look at the, see, I'm just giving you as an example, a NASSCOM event. It's a product conclave, but then they will have a small event talking about accessibility.
Or about inclusion at
the workplace. Or about diversity and inclusion at workplace. But our flip was, can I do an entire event where the stars, where the heroes are people with disabilities, where the entire conversation is on people
is
with disabilities.
Is initiated by people with disabilities. It's not, they're on the fringes.
No.
Like, I'll give you an example because, you know, a couple of things you've told me today resonate very strongly with me from a different perspective. Because, see, when you told me about how your wife and you, Dipali, and you went through those emotions of denial and anger and fear and self-pity.
Yeah.
You know, it's so hard for me because I was diagnosed with my eye condition when I was 8.
Yeah.
But I don't know what my parents went through.
Yeah.
So when people ask me, they're like, you're inspiring.
Yeah.
You're, I'm like, you know what? I was 8.
Yeah.
And maybe Vivan doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Or maybe he does because he's young still.
Yeah.
But for us, because I might call myself in the same category as Vivan, as the person, in this case, the so-called victim, is that we don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm not really the true inspiration because my parents were fully formed adults.
Yeah.
Life was going well for them.
Yeah.
And they had to deal with this blow.
Yeah.
So that's what resonates for me because they are the people who have to deal with the stigma, the same motions that you and your wife went through.
Yeah,
so this particular summit, the India Inclusion Summit, is just not about the people with disabilities.
Yes, it's because the entire community.
Yeah, because the people with disabilities, in retrospect, it's inspiring.
Yeah.
But for us, when we're going through it, we just want to live life.
Yeah.
And that struggle and that courage and that strength is all in the moment because you just want to live the next day.
Yeah.
For many people, either for me, it's with my visual impairment. For some people with cerebral palsy, it's more physically debilitating.
Yeah. Yeah.
With someone who's in a wheelchair, it's even more debilitating when it comes to motion and movement.
Yeah.
But what people don't realize, and I want you to talk about this, is the whole approach to it.
Yeah.
It's number one, the people who have the disability.
Yeah.
The second is like for my mom when she had to deal with this when in the 1990s, 1990 in fact, the support system was zero.
Yeah.
If you're disabled, your son should either be homeschooled or the prospects are very limited.
Absolutely.
Right? So the support system, which is either the NGOs or the organizations helping with training people with disabilities or even as simple as the society around you, your community, your people, how they receive it, because they're like, oh, your son is blind.
Yeah.
It's a large problem. It's not just one point,
course,
you know?
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say with this support system is that it's multifaceted.
Absolutely.
It's the people who are providing support, people who need the support, and it's also the acceptance and, as you said, the narrative.
Yeah.
So how is this particular initiative, the support, the India Inclusion Summit, how is it created and what have you done to ensure a holistic approach to the narrative in India?
Very good question. And this is a massively complex problem, Sandeep, right? I mean, in the last 8 to 10 years, the more deeper you get, the more you realize how complex the problem is.
Yeah.
The first realization is the lowest common denominator is awareness, right?
Yeah.
If people are not aware, they are not sensitive. If they are not sensitive, they will not act, right? So our mission has always been focusing on to make people aware. Now, let me give you some data and statistics to explain what awareness is, right? The first misconception that people have is that disability happens to somebody else.
Yeah.
And I want to tell very clearly that everybody is going to be disabled at some point or the other. We are all going to fall on that spectrum.
Or in some way or
In some way or the other at some point in life. Let me give you some statistics, right? If you look at the world UN statistics, they say between 12 to 15% of the world's population is disabled in some form or the other.
That is the definition of disability.
That is the definition of disability. Yeah. And the total number adds up to around 1 billion people, right? So that's 15%.
Yeah.
But this, we are not including people of older age.
Right.
You have to understand one number, one fact, that the old age people are all going to have some form of disability or the other. My father is going to go through a knee replacement surgery, which means that he will have to use a wheelchair, which means at some point he will feel what it is to be disabled himself, right? So what I'm saying is everybody at some point or the other, whether it's old age, whether it's natural, some form of disability, you will fall there.
Yeah.
So I feel it's a moral responsibility of every human being to make that realization that what you do for that community is going to help you in some way or the other.
Right? Yeah, because I feel the society we live in is kind of catering to a perfect human life.
Yes.
Like either you have all your faculties, mental, emotional, and physical.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as long as you are a contributing member of society where you're able to provide, you will be taken care of.
Absolutely.
But the moment something goes wrong in your life,
either
an accident, a disease, a debilitating incident,
yes,
then no one's ready for it. Because absolutely, then you're not a functioning member of society that can contribute back.
Exactly.
Which is the problem.
Yeah.
Which is the fundamental, not even approach to for your summit.
Yes.
But it's also the way humans are. It's a greed factor.
Yes.
If you're good,
yeah,
you'll be taken care of.
Yeah.
If you're not good, in their definition,
yes,
you're no longer worthy in our eyes.
Absolutely. So what I'm trying to tell is disability is not just defined by a person's physique or inability to perform certain functions, but also by the degree to which social and structural barriers prevent the person's full participation in the society.
Absolutely.
That is important.
That is
so important. It's not just your disability, but mm-hmm, our society creates so many barriers,
yeah,
right? To a normal functioning.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you an example, when I was driving down today for this interview,
mm-hmm,
I had Priyanka with me, who was also a visually impaired person. And it was very interesting. I was asking, how is your life fundamentally different? She says, Firoz, just to give you a simple example, if I have to, I can't take a public transport. It's mm-hmm, just unsafe. Being yeah, a woman and being visually impaired.
That's the point I want to come. It's layered.
Layered, yeah, right?
Disability is not a broad definition.
Exactly.
You've got layers of individualism.
Absolutely.
The gender, absolutely, socioeconomic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
right?
Please finish. Yeah.
So what I'm trying to tell you, so she's saying, Firoz, I am forced to take a cab every day.
Yeah.
Which means what I could have managed, a normal sighted person could have managed with 100 rupees,
yeah,
I have to pay 400 rupees.
Yeah.
Which means a person with disability actually have to spend more
mm,
to get the basic needs that yeah, most people with who are so-called abled can go with. So the
yeah,
problem is at multiple level, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of the things, my core realization is, if you don't solve the problem holistically,
mm-hmm,
we will not make progress.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my key realization, which
yeah,
means that I see a lot of people doing incredibly good work, whether
yeah,
they are in the nonprofit or in the government or in the corporates, but
mm-hmm,
all of them work in silos.
Yeah.
And sometimes, my realization is sometimes the biggest enemy of the disability sector
mm-hmm,
is the disability sector.
Right.
And why do I say this? Because a person who's visually challenged thinks being visually challenged is the number one problem, and no other problem is as bad as being visually challenged.
Yeah.
Which means all of us are working in a scarcity mindset.
Yeah.
Right? I'm saying, why can't a person who's visually challenged and a person who's autistic and an elderly person look at this as a collective problem?
Yeah.
Unless you see it as a force of the collective, will not make progress.
That number is one, my and number two is also is that I feel on that point,
yes,
is that people think when you say the word disability in India,
yeah, yeah,
it's a person being chained up outside their house in a slum.
Yes, yes.
But the thing is that just because I am partially sighted and
yeah,
Priyanka may be more visually
yeah,
impaired
yeah,
and there's someone who's got cerebral palsy and
yeah,
hearing impaired,
yeah,
it's not a competition.
Yes.
And secondly, it doesn't mean because I might be privileged and I have the support system,
yes,
it doesn't mean I don't face issues.
Absolutely.
Now, as you said with this, it's that you can't make it like a periodic table or
yeah,
a competition or a categorization of disability.
Exactly.
It's disability in that sense is not a general definition.
Yes.
But I feel it's also a definition which it can be approached as a large problem.
Yes.
It's within that you have subtext. Within
yes,
that you have addressing certain things like policy
yes,
or certain needs, because what I need someone else might not and
yeah,
vice versa.
Yeah.
So I feel, how do you approach that?
So one of the things that I've been thinking about, Sandeep, and I'm doing a research on this. My next book is actually based on building a blueprint for making
mm-hmm,
the country inclusive. I'm
talking, yeah,
when I talk about inclusive, it's a broad term, but I'm now mm-hmm, talking about specifically disability, right?
Yeah.
Why hasn't we made progress as much as we should when the numbers show that this is a massive problem?
Yeah.
This is the largest minority in the world, Sandeep, right?
Yeah.
People don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the largest minority in the world. 1 billion people are having some form of disability.
Yeah.
Why haven't we moved the needle? And after speaking to many thought leaders, one of the things I got to know was that movements happen when there is an inherent anger, right?
Large scale, movements are born.
Movements are born when yeah, people are angry about status quo. The problem with disability is people accept the status quo.
Yeah.
Oh, just because some place is not accessible, I am okay with it. I will take the stairs.
Yeah.
No, unless there is anger, and anger can happen.
And that shows even with the Me Too movement.
Absolutely.
Until that happened,
yeah,
people are like, yeah, well,
yeah, it's okay.
The women, they'll take it at the
yeah,
workplace.
Yeah, yeah.
Or not even that, like
yeah,
one woman will get angry and
yeah,
other women will be like, why is she so angry?
Yes.
But it, as you said, the inherent idea of you are being wrong.
Yes.
And it's not even about fair.
Yeah.
It's injustice.
Yes.
I think
yes,
that is the fundamental birth.
Yes.
For
large-scale movements.
Large-scale movements and also the fire to keep the movement burning.
Absolutely.
Right?
And what I today want to see across the country is to have people who have a burning desire to change the status.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that burning desire, if everybody accepts the status quo, no change is going to happen. And for me, for that to happen, we have to let people first tell that this is a problem that's not going to happen to somebody else. It's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
It's going to happen to your parent, your children at some point in their life,
right?
Only then, unless people make it personal, there is no anger.
Absolutely. And I feel a lot of people feel, and this is in India especially, and this is from personal experience, that education means a person is aware. Of course it is, because people are willing to expand their mind. But what I notice in India is the security guard, the lift man, the nurse, or maybe not the CEO, are more aware. They hold my arm and guide me to a place. Maybe they'll overdo the help. But what I've noticed is a lot of people in the so-called elite part of society are very comfortable using the right word, the politically correct term.
Absolutely.
But they don't do anything about it.
Absolutely.
They'll say, Sandeep, our next speaker is visually impaired. But no one's warned me that there's a gap between the stage. Not even that, but no one, they'll say, it's such an inspiration and honor to have you here. But no one's willing to grab my arm and say, Sandeep, can I help you to the toilet? So I'm saying this is the gap. The so-called intellects and educated people are willing to talk the talk. But who's walking the walk?
This is, my two insights here is, so I've been trying to see why are people not making that shift, right? And this is because most people are still at the sympathies level, right? What I've seen change happen is when people move from sympathy to empathy and from empathy to compassion.
Right.
Sympathy is all about, I saw somebody with a problem on the road.
And From a distance.
Empathy is when you start feeling it. Right? Whereas compassion is when you start feeling the other person's pain.
You live the person's pain.
You have, as if it's your own pain. You have internalized that pain.
Yeah.
Shift happens when people have moved to the compassion zone, right? And unfortunately, my own realization is that only when it happens to you are you forced into the compassion zone.
When you have to live with that problem.
Yes.
Either it happens to you or the person who you love, it happens to them.
It happens to me, right?
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to say that's the only time it happens.
But it's most hard-hitting. Because my wife came into this relationship knowing I'm visually impaired. It was a long-distance relationship. Then we were girlfriend and boyfriend. Then we got married. But until she lived with me, started living with me, small nuances started driving home for her. She's like, oh. And it's not like she was unaware or not wanting to learn.
Absolutely.
But until you're in that problem with that person or in the problem yourself, that's when you're like, you know, and that's that is what India needs.
Absolutely. And again, I think one of the things that you pointed out is why are leaders at senior positions not empathetic enough, right? And like you said, a lot of people have somehow got the art of telling the right things. You know, they're all trained to do it. I call them the fakers, right? They fake it very well.
And they
act as if they're genuine. But the real genuine ones will do something about it.
The genuine when the camera's on.
That's
what I wanted to say.
Oh,
I look good on social media by saying this. Once it's off, it's like, kick that guy out.
And that is where I come back. My core understanding is that success is massively overrated. And the reason for that is success is all about yourself, right? When did I get my promotion? What position? How big a car? How is it all about
me,
yourself?
Me,
yeah, right? Significance is when you've started driving change for others. Others who are in less privileged position and where you made a difference to somebody else. And I think if people get to that point that success is usually overrated, doesn't mean much. And I've seen a lot of successful people who will say that, you know what, it didn't mean much. You know, until you get it, you don't realize it. But significance is what keeps you going. That is what gives you deep joy. And for me, the Inclusion Summit is like a, you know, an annual get-together of driving home the message. But again, we don't want it to be like an annual event and forget for the rest of the year. So we're doing a lot of activities around the
throughout
summit.
Throughout the year.
Yeah, throughout the year. There's a fellowship, there's an Art for Inclusion, there's a walkathon. So we're doing a lot of events around it. Our big mission is to make India truly inclusive by 2030.
Congratulations and God bless your efforts.
Thank you.
And people, Feroz, are listening to this right now who are either disabled or dependent or know someone who is not able to come out and ask for that help. How can they find you or your organization or organizations in this space that are collaborating with you?
Yeah, so all details about the inclusion movement is there on www.indiainclusionsummit.com.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one place.
Those details will be posted in the link in the description
and
below.
Of course, they can reach out to me at firozvr2015@gmail.com.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. You don't stalk us, right?
No, I'm fine. You know, sometimes you may get 10 not so great mails, but sometimes there's one hidden gem in that, and I'm willing to scan through all of that to get that one hidden gem.
Perfect. And of course, Firoz has co-authored a book with Sudha Menon called Gifted. Yes. And how many languages is it out now?
Now it is in 5 languages. But my last book was called Grit, The Life of Major D.P. Singh, which is a graphic novel.
That's the most recent one.
Most recent one.
Right. But you had a first book out as well.
Yes.
That was Gifted.
That
right?
was Gifted. Yeah.
Gifted. And it's a bestseller in many languages. And
yes.
I'm in it. So that's why I bring it up. Who cares about Grit? But of course, you can catch the India Inclusion Summit. It happens every year in Bangalore. The weekend before World Disability Day?
Yes.
So or close to around that time?
Yeah, third week of November normally.
Third week of November. It's happening, in fact, as we speak, this weekend in Bangalore. And if you want to register, as Firoz said, the details are on IndiaInclusionSummit.com. And Firoz, you know, it's truly a pleasure to call you a friend and truly an honor to be associated with the work you've done and the work you continue to do. And from on behalf of everyone who is disabled and people who are related and associated with people who are disabled, thank you.
Thank you.
And appreciate you being on today's episode.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure being with you, Sandeep. As sure. I said, I would do anything to spend an hour with you.
I've got his email. I've got his number. If you guys are lucky enough, you'll see him soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. God bless. Appreciate it.
All the best.
Cheers, brother.
Bye-bye.
Life Gone Wrong is mixed and mastered by Resonance Studios. Music by Vinod Subramaniam. Produced and hosted by me, Sandeep Rao. Thanks for listening.